What's up, Bucks Nation? Welcome into today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. I am your host for today's episode, David Harrison. One half of the normal hosting duo that you're used to, James Yarko, is off today celebrating his birthday. Happy birthday to you, James. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter at @JYarko_Bucks. You can follow me on Twitter at DHarrison82. Follow the show at Locked On Bucks, and then find everything James and I are writing about your Tampa Bay Buccaneers over at BucksNation.com and on Twitter at Bucks_Nation. To kick off today's show, we're going to be talking some new developments pertaining NFL training camps league-wide. This is your Tampa Bay Buccaneers lead story, courtesy of two tweets sent out by Adam Schefter of ESPN. The first one, quote, "And so the NFL has told all of its teams that they must stay on at their team facilities for the summer's training camps." Schefter later followed up with, "And the NFL just sent a memo to teams informing that they will also, or that they also will not be allowed to hold joint practices with other teams this summer either. Per source, it had developed into a popular practice in recent years. And in fact, Buccaneers fans, you guys are all going to know the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have been one of the teams that have taken advantage of the ability to do joint practices in previous years." Of course, as late as last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosted the Miami Dolphins in Tampa, Florida at their practice facility and their training camp facility for some joint practices leading up to their preseason game. And head coach Bruce Arians, who at the time was in his first year with the team, went on record talking about how the joint practices are even more valuable to the team and to the player development and learning the scheme and learning the coaches than any of the preseason games possibly are, because they work on things in those training camp practices that they don't honestly do in the preseason. We saw things like end arounds to Chris Godwin happening during those training camp practices, and we didn't really see those in the preseason. You didn't really see them until late in the regular season, or later in the regular season than we expected to, but that was a wrinkle of the Buccaneers offense that if you went to one of those practices, or if you were a media member there fortunate enough to cover it, you saw those things getting put into place and being installed, and then you saw where they came up later on in the season. So losing out on those joint practices certainly going to hurt every team that likes to participate in those. And in the state of Florida, there's three NFL teams, so of course those teams like to take advantage of that opportunity. The Buccaneers just this offseason were supposed to be where they were scheduled to have joint practices with the Jacksonville Jaguars prior to their own preseason matchup scheduled for August 22nd. However, due to these new developments from the NFL league office, they will not be able to hold those, and they will have to practice against themselves. They won't be able to hit anybody until the preseason games, and then they won't be able to hit anybody really full speed 100% within their schemes and their language for actual competition until September. Now, as far as the rest of the NFL league memos going out today, none of that really impacts the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've got one of the best facilities to train and to practice at. Training camp last year went off without a hitch. That new indoor facility, or it was not so much new anymore, but you know, it's still kind of new. The new indoor facility worked out beautifully. There were many days where the team started outside, got as much outside work in as they could before the weather unfortunately forced them inside. And I'm sure that this offseason we're going to have similar situations. It's Florida. You guys know how it goes. But fortunately, all the fans were able to get in safely before anything ever, you know, happened or there were any problems. The players were all able to get indoors safely before there were any problems. And the team was able to get their practices and they were able to get their work and their reps in. And I think it was an enjoyable experience for all, despite having to move and having to do those transitions from outdoor to indoor. But there are some other teams who travel around their state. And some of those fans look forward to that. So for those fans, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely a bummer. It's something that's not going to make them look forward to the offseason, to training camp season, just as much as they normally probably would. But it's just part of everything that the NFL is doing, the players and the coaches are doing to try to make sure that football happens. If they were to travel out of the area and cause those logistical problems when the family's traveling and now you've got people intermingled with other people that they haven't been around for, you know, an entire year, and just someone gets sick, it really is only going to take one person to get sick. That stuff spreads through the locker room, it spreads through the staff, and next thing you know, we've got a canceled NFL season. So the league hoping that if they minimize travel as much as possible for the early part of training camp in the preseason, and they keep the exposure of their players and staff as minimized as possible, that they can all stay healthy and we can actually have an NFL season. Whether or not we have players or whether or not we have fans in the stands to watch those games live is still something that is up for debate, something that is up for future discussion. But I think we all agree that we would rather have football to watch on television if at a minimum, rather than having no football at all. Of course, the media is scheduled to meet with Bruce Arians on Thursday, and I'm sure that Coach Arians will talk about some of those things, some of these new developments and those impacts on the season, as well as some other things going on in the country, speaking of which, we're going to get to a little bit of that stuff as well. But before we get on to that, guys, we got to talk a little bit about our title sponsor for today's episode, rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of vehicles, it is now impossible for your local chain storefront to stock all of the parts you're ever going to need. Why endure the pointless and seemingly intimidating search for parts as the counterman orders the parts on his computer that his company holds in their warehouse, not necessarily the ones you want or the best ones for your car? You have computers. You have access to rockauto.com. At home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for more important things like mortgage or food, like Built Bars. Why would you choose to spend 30, 50, 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? For example, a Delphi FG1456 fuel pump assembly for a 2005 to 2010 Honda Odyssey will run you $353.99 at a big chain store, but it will only cost you $216.79 at rockauto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest price possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require a membership or a log-on account to log in. Lastly, RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years now. Go to RockAuto.com, shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, RockAuto.com. All right, guys, back here on the Locked On Bucks podcast this Thursday. And it is a very tumultuous and a very interesting time in our country right now. We have not only the COVID-19 pandemic situation going on, but we now also have protests. We also have riots. We've got talks about police brutality, about reform, about racism in this country. Once again, despite the fact that it's 2020, we are still talking about these conversations. And I will tell you that James and I have had several off-air, off-recording conversations between the two of us over the years, working together both in a written capacity and on this podcast and our previous podcast. James and I have come to know each other pretty well and feel pretty comfortable about having honest, open conversations with each other, understanding that each of us comes from a different walk of life. I've had some conversations both publicly on Twitter and in private. There's one specific listener who I'm not going to name that person outright just to protect their privacy, because that conversation did happen in a private setting that we've had some very beneficial, at least what I feel have been very beneficial conversations. Some of you have seen the interactions between Brett and I from the PewterCast. He and I have also had some conversations offline on Messenger and continue to have conversations. And The question I think surrounding this for a lot of us, a lot of content creators, right, has been, how do we use our platform? And I understand that some of you already right now probably not wanting to listen to the rest of this. And I ask you that you do, only because to get to the root of some of the issues that go on, not just in this country, but in all countries and just with human interaction, I think that the important thing for everybody to understand is being able to have empathy for another person and understand where they're coming from. And that's kind of the conversation that we're going to have for the rest of this episode. I know you guys come here for Buccaneers information, for Buccaneers news, and believe me, James and I love delivering that to you. However, an email yesterday from David Locke of the Locked On podcast network, of course, kind of sparked some wheels starting to turn. What stemmed from that email was responses from fellow Locked On podcast network hosts, voicing their opinions, their thoughts, their feelings, what they felt the network could do, what they've already done, or what they feel they've already done. And yesterday, off of that email and the string of emails, I sat down to sort my own thoughts out. And I didn't know what I was going to write. I didn't know what I wanted to say, but I knew that I wanted to take part in this and contribute to positive change in our country and positive growth for other people as much as I could. And what I ended up writing was about 800 words. So what I'm gonna do now, so let me back up just a little bit. So I sent that over to James, and he liked it. I sent it over to another host in the network that you guys have heard from, Ross Jackson. I know that he covers the Saints, but you know, Ross has become a very good friend of ours, of mine, someone I highly respect, and someone who's also been at the forefront of some of these conversations we've been having as a network. So I definitely sent it to him. He definitely gave me some good feedback. And then I sent he and James both the entire 800-word, whatever you want to call it, that I wrote. And I essentially asked James, this is his show as well, so I asked him how he felt about me sharing this with our listeners on this episode, my solo episode, to be played on Thursday. And he was fully in support of it and actually felt like it would be a good idea. And then Ross as well was very supportive. So here, guys. So I'm gonna tell you guys what I kind of have been thinking about. All right. So some of you guys already know this. Regular listeners already know a good amount about me. And in fact, I actually got a tweet not too much before I sat down to record this that I'm actually going to talk about as well from one of our most common listeners and one of our most regular interactors on Twitter. So it just kind of leads me into thinking that this is a conversation that needs to happen. No, it's not Buccaneers focused. I understand that. So for those of you who don't know, I've been a law enforcement professional myself for going on 20 years as an active duty member of the United States Army. I'm proud to have been doing that. I'm good at what I've done. I'm proud of the good that I've done in this country and in other countries and communities for soldiers, for civilians, for family members. And I'm proud of the good that I've seen done serving next to soldiers and other law enforcement professionals, both in the city, state, county, sheriff levels. I've worked with the United States Secret Service. People, professionals of all colors, religions, sexual orientations, and even gender identities. I've worked with pretty much any walk of life you can think. Kind of the great thing about military life is that we really are just kind of a representation of what America is as a whole. And I want to emphasize that in my experiences, it's not just military police that I'm talking about. Again, I've trained and served and conducted missions and operations with civilian law enforcement counterparts, and been very proud to do so. So while I've been doing that for 20 years, I've also lived 37 years as a minority. My father is white. My mother is Korean. Most people that meet me will tell me that I look Hispanic. This reality has exposed me to what I view as a 360-degree view of racism. I've been told I wasn't allowed to check the Caucasian box because I'm mixed race. I've also been told I'm not really Asian because I'm half white. I've been called more Hispanic racial slurs than any other I can think of. And I've also been told that my experiences with racism weren't good enough because I'm not black, and racism against black people is always worse. Now, generally speaking, I think historically and in some parts in functionality, I actually agree with the last part as an overall theme, just not at the marginalizing of my own personal experiences. Most recent history, you know, I wish I could tell you that these are things that go back to my childhood, but something happened not too long ago. I was traveling out of state. Again, you guys that have listened regularly, you know that I have to travel out of state for what I do for the Army quite often. And one of those trips, I was traveling out of state. I rely on Yelp a lot because, you know, I don't know every single place that I go to. I was in the mood for some wings, to be quite honest with you guys. And so I Yelped some good places to get chicken wings, and I found one, and I decided I was going to take a chance on that place. I found some really good places that way. So I called ahead, and I called in my order, and everything was fine. And I showed up to the building, and listen, this is kind of part of what some people are talking about, okay? Because of where I was, and because of where I ended up pulling up, and almost immediately, the hairs on the back of my neck kind of stood up. But I said, you know, you don't know anything about anything. So until you experience something, there's no reason to jump to conclusions, right? So I very quickly told my intuition and my instincts to be ready in case they were needed, but to not get in my way. And I got out of the car and I went into the business. And as soon as I went to the business, guys, I can't even emphasize to you how much of a cliche it is, but how reality or how real it is. It was like the scenes in the movies where somebody walks into a room and the record scratches and everybody just stops what they're doing and immediately stares at the person that doesn't fit in. And in that situation, it was me. Immediately felt uncomfortable. It took about probably a good solid 10 seconds for the person behind the counter to say, what can I do to help you? I said, oh, I called in an order. Here's my name. She said, okay, it'll be ready in just a minute. I said, okay, thank you. There was one seat at the end of the counter that was open, so I took a seat and I sat there in silence as the other people in the facility also sat there in silence and not knowing what to do. I picked up my phone, started texting my wife, and I said, you know, this is what's going on right now, and it's just very uncomfortable, and, you know, really hope my food gets done quickly so I can get out of these people's hair and let them get on with their business and get on with my own. And I texted a friend of mine and said the same thing. The friend responded in a very joking manner. The friend is a white male. Responded in a sense that I probably just was misfeeling the vibe in the room. It wasn't shortly after that that one of the gentlemen in the establishment said, "Hey, I can't remember the name of the other person." But he said, "Hey, you know, we'll call him Bill. I don't remember what his name is, but we'll call him Bill. Say, hey, Bill, you remember that time we had to get into a scuffle with that guy because he didn't know where he belonged?" And the only response I heard was a grunt, like, And I just kind of sat there and said, okay, interesting. around a little bit after that, I stopped texting with the friend because obviously that wasn't going to help matters. But I continued texting with my wife, who at the moment was honestly growing more and more concerned for my welfare and my safety. I stood up at one point. Another group of people came into the establishment. One of them was a military police officer, a Caucasian female who I had known from New York because she was stationed in the same battalion as I was not long before she apparently went to that state. And then here we are crossing paths again. She knows me. She knows who I am. We're not friends, you know. We're not even Facebook friends, but she knows who I am. She's called for me from a crowd of people without seeing me or my name tape before. So she knows me. She knows who I am. We locked eyes. I looked at her, she looked at me, she immediately looked away and did not interact with me for the entirety of my time remaining in that building. Part of that group, another gentleman walked up kind of closely behind me, but not right behind me, kind of sat there, and it was one of those situations where I kind of feel his eyes burning a hole in the back of my head. So I said, okay, obviously, this is not a situation where I'm going to be sitting at the end of this counter anymore. So I got up, looked at the gentleman. As I looked at him, he looked away from me. I said, here, sir, I'm just waiting on to-go food. Please have my seat, and I will gladly wait and stand as I will be leaving. And I said it just like that to make sure that everybody in that establishment understood that I was picking up on the vibe you were laying down, and we were going to be okay as long as you were going to be okay. So I decided to then go stand up by the exit and make sure that I had a proper egress in case I needed it. And that gentleman, shortly after I got up, removed the bar stool, or removed the stool at the bar that I was sitting at, took a different stool, put it up there, and proceeded to sit on the stool. Maybe that was his favorite stool. I don't know. So I sat there, still waiting on my food. Another gentleman walks in, stops, looks at me, keeps walking in. Hear him walk into the back of the kitchen. He says, "What is going on here?" I don't hear any other of the conversation. But what I hear shortly after is she comes out with my food, and I hear from the kitchen that gentleman say, "Well, if I was here, it never would have happened in the first place." She brings me my food. She brings me my receipt. I grab a pen, and she says, "I've got to go in the back. Go ahead and just leave that there. I'll come get it." And I said, "Okay, no problem." I signed it. I left a nice tip. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. And I walked out. Fortunately, walked out. Drove to my hotel, and that is a story not unlike others. I actually remember the first time we were in a store, and the manager of the store started following me around, and it was my wife who actually noticed it before I did, and followed me around the store as I was browsing around, very, very intently. So guys, that's racism in a nutshell. You know what I mean? And yeah, I walked out, you know, intact without a fight on my hands, and there were no weapons drawn. There were no, honestly, ill words said, you know, directly. But that's racism. And if you don't believe that it exists, I think that's probably one of the most surprising things is I've seen with all this going on, one of my very good friends, his nephew, actually posted on Facebook an apology to all minorities because he never believed this stuff actually existed. And, you know, I'm not really big into, you know, defining, you know, privilege or anything like that. But I think that when people talk about things like privilege, that's kind of what they're talking about, is having the ability to live in an existence where you don't actually believe these things are real, that they're figments of your imagination, somebody else's imagination, the media or Hollywood. I am here to tell you that they are very real and they're very true. That is just one of many, many experiences that I would, not happily, but, you know, if it was an honest conversation, be willing to share with people, you know, over a beer or soda or a bottle of water. But anyway, so nearly 20 years ago, I signed up to be a member of law enforcement, and I'll tell you, my friends and my family couldn't believe it. To this day, I have to admit I did it on accident. It's actually kind of a funny story, but we don't have time for that today. Since then, I've seen the best and the worst human beings can do to each other. I've met bad cops and I've met good cops. I wish I could tell you that every time I met a bad cop, I did everything I could to make sure that bad cop was fixed, but that would be a lie. Especially younger in my career, it was kind of one of those situations where I felt it'd be best to get along where I fit in and just do my job the best I could and hope that the bad ones were dealt with through other means. As I got older in my career, I realized that it wasn't good enough to just be good myself, that being a good soldier, being a good cop, or being a good leader was the minimum standard, that to truly be a leader, I had to hold other leaders accountable for their transgressions as well. Not to be holier than thou, believe me, I'm not perfect, but to expect those with the privilege of serving others to do so with service in their intentions. And I suppose that's my message in all of this. Racism isn't going anywhere. It will never go away. And that is something I truly believe with every fiber in my being. But the way that we treat each other is in our control. And if you're one of my peers, trusted, trained, and equipped to protect the people of your community, whether you are in Chicago, Illinois, MacDill Air Force Base, Florida, or Fort Carson, Colorado, the badge, the authority, and the status that we have been given does not give us power over our community. It gives us responsibility for it. We are leaders in these streets. And to that end, we have failed. The blue line is supposed to signal pride and service, but I've watched it become a beacon of blind allegiance to all who call policing their profession. Loyalty to that blue line is not about keeping our problems in-house. It's about holding each other accountable to what our profession is meant to represent. Safety for those in danger, assistance for those in need, and swift delivery to justice for those who require it. Justice is not found in the morgue, and only those who leave us no choice are intended to end up there before they first meet their judge, jury, and sometimes executioner. Lethal force is only authorized when lethal force is presented. We are first responders. We are not instigators. We are not escalators. We do not have the right to raise our level of force because someone was disrespectful, mean, or made us exert more energy than we felt necessary. But we, as a brotherhood and sisterhood of blue, have instigated this turmoil. And now I see clip after clip of unarmed protesters being met with levels of force echelons above what the situation calls for. And quite frankly, it sickens me because the good cops are going to pay for those violations while the community suffers through them today. What I'm saying is, it's not good enough to be good cops ourselves. We have a growing threat to our communities, and they wear the same clothing as we do. The other threats have been and will always be there, but this one is the biggest threat of all. If we, the good ones, don't fix it, then nobody will. If our leaders won't fix it, then we have to have the personal courage to stand up to them and expose them for their failures. Only then can we claim to be the protectors of our communities. Only then can we start to mend this distrust. If we had stood for our communities before it got this far, we wouldn't have to stand with them today. If you are out there protesting, please be safe. Because some of the people who look like protesters are not there for the same reasons you are. It's the protesters that are going to make a difference. And it's the good cops that can make a difference. But we have to be willing and continue to be willing to do the hard part, to have the hard conversation, to be that guy. And that is what I hope we all learn from this situation, from this time. I thank you all for listening to what I had to say. Those of you who have stayed with me. Of course, as always, please enjoy the rest of your day. Please be safe. James and I will be back tomorrow with Tampa Bay Buccaneers conversation and news. I will be sitting in with head coach Bruce Arians tomorrow, so we will have plenty from his conversation with the media. So until we speak again, thank you so much for joining me right here at Locked On Bucks.